You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Make sure to throw me a follow on Twitter at @Zach_Goodall, as well as my co-host, Chris Thornton, who you can find on Twitter at @MistoCristofo. Chris and I both had a bit of a long day at work, so we're a little tired. So sorry if we kind of rushed through this episode. Not a ton of content yet. We're kind of saving ourselves for the crossover episode with Locked On Titans with Jimmy Morris coming tomorrow. So be sure to keep an eye out for that. We'll be recording that Tuesday night sometime, probably push it on Wednesday. But Chris, as always, say what's up to the people.
This is now a Bew. Man, I'm going to have to learn to get his name down better.
Bo.
Banchwell. I'll get that down. This is a Bo fan account now.
This is a Wisconsin whatever side guard he is. Right guard account. If that doesn't tell you we are on to draft season at its fullest capacity, I don't know what to tell you guys, folks. I've spent all afternoon watching Justin Herbert. Get ready for some takes on him coming later this week. Get ready for some draft takes coming from Chris whenever he decides that he wants to put out more draft content.
And it's probably going to be Bo Benchwell.
All right, well, cool. Chris is trying to build a brand around some blockers, offensive line. We were talking about tight ends earlier in the day, so keep an eye out for that. We also have a scouting report coming out on Tuesday morning at Locked On Jaguars. It is from neither Chris nor I. But it's from Rory Songer, who's written for us for a while. He took a couple weeks break to try and get, you know, some work stuff in his non-football life out of the way. But he's got a breakdown coming on Oklahoma wide receiver Marquise Hollywood Brown, something you guys are going to want to keep an eye out for. Jacksonville could add another speedy Oklahoma receiver like they did with Dede Westbrook in Brown. He's a guy that I know Rory likes a lot. I know Chris has been on the Marquise Brown train for a very long time. He's the cousin of Antonio Brown, Steelers wide receiver. Something you guys are going to look for at the Locked On Jaguars website. So while you're on the Locked On Jaguars website, make sure to go ahead and bookmark it and subscribe to the podcast anywhere you can listen to shows. iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Megaphone. Keep leaving those ratings and reviews, and let's get this thing rolling. Chris has got a fresh set of PFF grades from this Jaguars versus Colts game this past week. They came out this evening. So, Chris, go ahead and start hitting us with some of the most impressive ones.
What do you want to hear? Because I have whatever you want.
Talk to me. So people still think that the Jaguars pass rush has regressed. They say it every week that the sacks aren't there. I disagree. They've regressed statistically because it's incredibly difficult to match what they did last year. And Todd Wash is not a good play caller. And he's so, he doesn't want to change from sending four rushers max at a time, like the very rare fifth rusher. It just doesn't happen. So I wouldn't put that regression on them whatsoever. As talented as players as they are, I don't think they've regressed. Chris, go ahead and hit me with the pass rush, because we really got to see them come out yesterday with a gasp, decent offense, kind of keeping the defense fresh.
Yeah, so the Jaguars had 27 total pressures on the day, which against this Colts O-line is pretty good considering how well they've been playing the last few weeks. If I can go off of memory, 27 is almost double what the Colts have let up in the last five or so weeks. So really good numbers from the Jaguars defensive line. Mayor of Saxonville, Calais Campbell, led the team in pressures with 8 total. He had 1 sack, 1 hit, 6 hurries, a batted pass, a tackle, 2 run stops. So Calais Campbell had a really good day. And then two guys that I was excited to see the grades on because they seemed to perform very well was Dewane Smoot, who had 5 total pressures, 2 hits, 3 hurries, a tackle, an assisted tackle, 1 run stop. And then Yannick Ngakoue, who had 4 total pressures, 1 sack, 1 hit, 2 hurries, 3 run stops, 1 assisted tackle, and 3 solo tackles. So those guys performed really well. Yannick actually had a 90 overall defensive grade, the highest on the defense. So Ngakoue had himself a strong day statistically, as well did as Smoot, which was reassuring to see because Smoot had started to kind of receive some flack from this year, wasn't really active a whole lot this year with Dante Fowler taking most of the snaps. And obviously once Dante got traded, Smoot became a regular active and has been playing decently well for his role that he stepped into.
Yeah, I think we've seen a lot of growth out of Smoot in the limited amount that we've been able to see him the past couple of weeks, and that was kind of on the Twitter timeline today as people were starting to notice that as well. So we looked forward to seeing him continue to grow if he's going to be a long-term plan. I mean, they had Brian playing the five tech and everyone kind of forgot about Smoot when they moved Brian back inside. Now we're starting to see Smoot get some playing time outside, so they very well might keep him for a little bit. Now let's flip sides and let's get to the offensive line, flipping the lines here. Cody Kessler was under a good bit of pressure, it seemed, throughout the day, but I'm curious to hear what the numbers are. Who played well and who played not so well? Chris, hit me with it.
So the Jaguars offensive line let up 18 total pressures on the day, and 8 of those pressures came from the right side. AJ Cann and Jeremy Parnell led the team in allowed pressures. AJ Cann letting up 2 sacks, 2 hurries for a total of 4 pressures, as well as having a penalty. And then Jeremy Parnell had let up 4 pressures, which were all 4 hurries, and he actually had 2 penalties. So the starters, quote starters, on the right side let up the most pressures and sacks and had the most penalties against them. So that was definitely something that you do not want to see. And then
before you go on, I just want to make like a really quick point. Isn't it funny that they're on their 4th starting left tackle, they're like 3rd starting left guard, because I'm pretty sure Reed started and now it's Omame, right? I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Omame took over for Reed at left guard.
Yeah, Omame was the starter going in.
So they are on their 4th string left tackle, 3rd string left guard, 2nd string tackle, and yet the 2 worst linemen on the field are their 2 starters on the right side.
I mean, when Omame came back, I didn't think he would struggle, to be honest, because as soon as I saw that he got released from New York, I figured we would be interested with the amount of injuries we've had to the O-line. So it seems he's come back and seamlessly hasn't missed a step.
I don't disagree. I just think it's hilarious because they skipped out on Will Hernandez at the 29th pick and could have shored up the right guard spot. And I'm very excited for Will Richardson next year. He's a great pass blocker in college, and I'm curious to see him translate to the NFL level, as well as to see if what they do at right guard. Replace AJ Cann, please. Sorry to cut you off. Please continue. I just thought that was an interesting tidbit.
Yeah, so Eric Flowers and Patrick Omame were the better half of the offensive line. Eric Flowers only letting up 2 total pressures on the day, which were 2 hurries. Had an 83.3 pass blocking grade and was the highest graded offensive lineman with a 74.9 overall, but was definitely stout in the passing game with an 83. And then Patrick Omame right behind him with a 79.1. So they were really good in the pass blocking game. And if you kind of look at the comparison, AJ Cann had a 50 and Jeremy Parnell had a 51. So pass blocking wise, the left side was getting it done. And then you have Chris Reed, who only played 5 snaps at left guard and had a 44.5 total pass or offensive rating, and he had a 2.0 pass blocking rating. So every week, a Jags lineman seems to be able to give me a lower and lower number that I've never seen before. But to be fair, Reed was only out there for 5 total snaps, 2 of them pass block, and 3 of them run block. So not really a huge sample size, but he let up 1 pressure. Koyak let up a pressure, and Shatley let up a pressure. And says Kessler let up 3 pressures. So I don't know if they're assuming that he kind of waltzed into pressure. I'm assuming that's what it might be. But so offensive line, right side, not so good. Left side, surprisingly well.
And I mean, if the left side is performing well, and like we kind of mentioned this before we started talking about it, we might talk about it more later, but Eric Flowers seems to be doing a decent job, which no one really expected at this point. So what if he could end up being the swing tackle going forward? Someone said that to me the other day, and I'm actually really curious if that could be something that happens, if they're trying to just find like some cheap depth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not opposed to it, because when Eric Flowers got released, I figured the Jags would give him a call due to all the New York connections. But when Eric Flowers came over, I I predicted that he would have a decently strong showing here in Jacksonville compared to what we had at what Josh Walker and Josh Wells at left tackle. So it was really just one of those situations where it couldn't get much worse. Eric Flowers came over, it was like maybe something good will happen, and he's performed decently well, as you would expect a fourth string left tackle to perform. I mean, that's the Jags need to sign and draft a lot more O-line depth next year, because it was apparent that it wasn't very strong this year. But and also, I think the writing's on the wall for the entire right side. I don't think a lot of people think AJ Can might get an extension or whatever. I pray to God that doesn't happen, and Jeremy Parnell needs to finally go. You'll save on the books cutting Parnell, but obviously the right side seems to be the link when the two guys that have been on your team for like 5 weeks and like 2 weeks are outperforming you in your own O-line.
Yeah, I definitely agree, and that's going to be probably one of the bigger storylines of the offseason that will go unregarded, because everyone's going to focus on the quarterback and the receivers and the tight end, as well as if they make any moves along that defensive line, that people may not think about what happens on the right side of the line. But you're probably going to have a new starter at right tackle. You've got one in-house that can take over, that they're planning on having take over, that they pretty much redshirted this year by putting him on IR right when they had the chance to do it, as well as, like you said, like they better replace AJ Can. He just has not shown up well at all this
which
year.
Which is disappointing, because in camp he was really kind of – he was starting to turn it up in like, camp. I thought it was going to be a strong year for him. And then
I did too. I thought he was finally putting it all together. Sucks to see that he really didn't, but it'll be time for them to move on. Now, we always like to focus on pressure counts on the offensive and defensive side of the ball when we use these PFF grades, but were there any other ones that stood out to you?
Not necessarily, because offensively there wasn't really a lot that went on, so I didn't even kind of go into it. If you're going defensively, Jalen Ramsey, although he had that hurt knee, had a strong day. He was targeted 12 total times, only let up 5 receptions for 54 yards, had 2 pass breakups and 2 drops, which means the ball hit the wide receiver's hands and they ended up dropping it. So I don't know if that's counting T.Y. Hilton's. It has a drop for T.Y., and I think that might be at the play. Or actually, no, that would be a pass breakup when T.Y. had it in his grasp and then Jalen was able to wrestle it out afterwards. So, but he was able to hold T.Y. to 3 receptions for 34 yards while playing on that hurt knee. And then D.J. Hayden had himself a strong day from the slot cornerback position, having an 86.2 overall grade, was targeted 9 times, let up 6 receptions for 48 yards, had the interception, and 1 pass breakup. So, strong day from DJ Hayden. And although the grades don't show it, well, actually, this is in coverage. Telvin Smith and Miles Jack had themselves a pretty strong day. It seemed to be probably by far their best games of the year. Telvin Smith having a 71 grade, and Miles Jack having a 69.2. So, the stats don't really show home a whole lot more, but Telvin Smith seemed to have played really well, especially in the first half of that Colts game.
And whether he actually played great or not in coverage, I guess the good part of it is that we didn't have times where we said, oh, Telvin let up a big play in coverage, which happens on a weekly basis.
He actually looked really good in coverage. I saw him like kind of breaking on routes and stuff, and nobody really got separation on him all day.
Now, was there a grade in there for Ronnie Harrison? If you said it,
there is a grade, and it was much lower than I was expecting.
What was it?
He had a 56.1 defensive rating.
Really?
An 81.4 in tackling, 68.9 in pass rush, run defense is 61.7, but coverage they have him as a 58. But in coverage, they only have him targeted 2 times. Let up 2 receptions for 30 yards. So that's where they're kind of hitting him. Had a 118.8 quarterback rating when targeted and had that penalty, which he really shouldn't have got. But that's the growing pains that you're going to get with Ronnie Harrison. But
and he's a safety.
Yeah.
So but, it's not like he's playing close to the line when he's always in coverage. Like he will get deep. Like 2 receptions for 30 yards, even as a rookie, isn't really going to bother me that much. But it's not weighted to giving safeties any slack compared to corners playing up in man coverage.
But yeah, he went from 5 or 8 snaps last week to 76 this week. So
all 76. That's
all. Important. Yep. All it's starter Harrison, and I believe he'll probably be the starter moving forward because you have absolutely no reason to put Church back out there.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, I think that should just about wrap up our PFF grades. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the offense and what we think they can do going forward. You know, the Kessler and Milanovic era started. What can they grow upon this week against Tennessee?
Winter is coming and nobody has you prepared like Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures up to 135 degrees and are powered by rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion batteries that last up to 12 hours on each charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone and any other gadget while you're wearing them. Perfect for any friend or family on that holiday gift list that might be getting cold a little bit too easily. But they're also great for anyone who works outdoors, skiers and snowboarders, or anybody that just loves the outdoors or hates being cold. Action Heat provides toasty warmth and comfort for your entire body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts and long johns. Action Heat is available in men's and women's and have great new styles and models just released for this winter season. Make winter activities more enjoyable with a blast of warmth. Action Heat is the perfect solution to keep you toasty and warm, even in the most frigid winter weather. We've got a special deal for our listeners to save 20% off your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon. Or use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Stay toasty warm while enjoying all your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. And we thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
So kind of the way I've put this with the Jaguars offense with Kessler out there and Milanovic is, yes, they were able to put together a win because they were just able to be efficient enough. As I say, have said, the bare minimum got the job done. But it kept the defense going. You know, the offense was able to convert on some plays that they needed to convert on. Kessler looked pretty tough out there. He was taking a lot of hits, but he was still scrambling. He just seemed to have a decent idea as to what he was doing. And he could throw a spiral, which was pretty refreshing as well. But obviously, it's not a perfect offense. They scored 6 points, and the defense did a great job keeping them going on the leads that they were able to put in. But Chris, what's the most important area of growth that you need to see this upcoming week against the Titans? And before you cheat me on this, don't say the run game, because Leonard Fournette's going to be back. And I think that's just kind of a cheat code right there.
I mean, I think that's definitely going to help the run game coming back with Leonard Fournette. But I think you're going to have to really have to push and try to move the ball vertically. TJ Yeldon was the team's leading receiver last week against the Colts, and that was because most of Cody Kessler's passes on the day were basic checkdowns TJ Yeldon. So that's going to be something that I want to see. I want to see more shots. I don't know if maybe they just didn't trust the protection or if they were just trying to keep it simple while Kessler was kind of getting his groove out there, but definitely stretching the field, maybe taking some shots deep, just throwing stuff longer than 5 or 10 yards. I know the joke is that Kessler can't hit anything beyond 10 yards, but you got to at least take that shot, especially if you're trying to get the run game going with Fournette. You're going to have to kind of open up the box a little bit.
And I think that deep ball to Dede Westbrook was actually a decently thrown ball. I don't know what Dede was doing when he like turned around. When if he just stayed in stride, it would have landed him right in his bread basket. But maybe it was the, oh my God,
I got led decently on a deep pass.
I think that's definitely something they're going to have to do. And I mean, call it cheating if you want. I'm going to branch off of what you said for mine. I think that they need to trust play action more, because they didn't. I may be wrong because I wasn't watching it on TV. I was watching it in the stadium, and there could be times I missed it. It didn't feel like they ran a ton of play action throughout the game. Now, granted, they will want the running game to work a little bit more, but when Yeldon was able to get some chunk yards every now and then when he was running the ball, like, I feel like they just need to start taking advantage of that. And Coughlin talked about it when he was on the radio last week, that he wants more of the explosive plays. And, I mean, you can get that on play action, even if it's not like some 20-plus yard gain. Like, if you're catching the defense, you know, on their toes when they're coming down to come and play the run, and suddenly you're able to pop one off for 10 to 15 yards, just totally catch them off guard on first and 10, like, make it happen. I think they need to do a lot more of that and get creative with it. And that'll take time with Kessler. He was a little bit more mobile yesterday than I thought he was going to be, whether it was scrambling or whether it was rolling with a lot of pressure. But take advantage of that and utilize his accuracy on rollouts. Get some, you know, some out routes, some corner routes, smash concepts on the outside on play action. Have a option to either hit the underneath curl or the corner going over top of it, just depending on what the corner's coming down and doing. Especially if you've got, you know, going against a cover three or cover four that you can take advantage of that with, you know, that's probably a route combo that Cody Kessler would be incredibly comfortable with that you could get those chunk yards on. And I think that's a perfect thing they can try and do on play action.
Nice. That just kind of branching off both of our things, and just the kind of overlying concept is just I think they got to take chances. You're going to be in prime time. Thursday Night Football, sorry America, but this team is, even though I don't think it's mathematically eliminated from playoff contention yet, you're eliminated from the playoffs in almost all meaning of the word. Take some chances. It might be ugly, but I tell you what, I would rather us lose a game that doesn't matter, but trying stuff like try that D.D. Westbrook jet sweep again, or I don't know, run up some trick plays, whatever you got to do, rather than if the Jags were to win another game like 6-3 or something. That was just that was so boring, really. Even though we got the win, it was a really boring football game. So I want to see something a little more interesting. I want to see Blake the Belldozer Bell involved in the game. That'd be nice. But just, I don't know, just crack open the playbook and see what you got left, and I don't know, maybe showcase some of the guys that aren't getting some playing time, like we were saying off air. Make Rashad Green inactive or waive Rashad Green or whatever, and bring up Alan Lazard. See what he's got to do. Test out some of those guys on your practice squad or something, because you have really nothing to lose, so might as well kind of just showcase some stuff and maybe hit Tennessee with stuff they're not expecting.
I just still want to see them try and use James O'Shaughnessy in a bigger role than they use him in, because he's their best tight end, even when Austin Seferian Jenkins is healthy.
Isn't
Hot take central.
Wait, ASJ, is he designated to return?
They said he was. You don't get designated necessarily. Like, they can say, like, yeah, like, we'd like to or whatever, but you are technically designated to return the week you're eligible to return, and they say, yeah, we're lifting him this week. They don't have to choose when they're like who they are and when, as soon as the injury comes out, they can just do it when players are technically allowed to, and then they can use two. But I believe that, because that was what, week after week five, so it technically would count as week six, I'm pretty sure, when they did that. So it would be this upcoming week, wouldn't it? Either this week or next week, maybe, because the bye week was in between, so it has to be eight games, I'm pretty sure. So it should be next week.
Okay, so week 15, so on the road, because we have a long week now, so that's our home game, I believe. I believe that's the home closer.
The final home
game. Yep,
against the Redskins.
Against the Mark Sanchez-led Redskins.
Oh, I cannot wait for that. That's going to be great TV from my couch, and definitely not at the stadium. Cody Kessler versus Mark Sanchez. That'll be awesome. That should do it on talking about a boring offense. When we come back, we're going to go ahead and get a little bit into the previewing, utilizing these PFF grades, talk about some intriguing matchups coming forward in this Jaguars versus Titans game on Thursday Night Football. And like Chris said, we're really sorry, America. So we were talking about Ereck Flowers earlier and that he's done a decent job. I think the Titans have put together a decent pass rush with some of the guys that they have there. And they've got a really flashy rookie and a guy named Harold Landry, who I think is going to be incredibly fun to watch against Will Richardson in the future, just because they were drafted same class. Richardson is the pass protection type of guy that was really great at that in college. And Landry is a pass rush specialist off the edge, and I think that'll be really fun to watch. But as for now, we're just kind of monitoring Landry's growth at this point. And this will probably end up being, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but I'd figure it's probably Ereck Flowers' biggest test yet. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, going by what PFF grades, they actually have Landry lining up over Parnell. So
all right,
obviously they can flip him around or whatnot, but it has Kamale Carrera over Eric Flowers. So like I said, you can flip your defensive ends, whatnot. But at the moment, it looks like Parnell versus Landry, which could also still be a very favorable matchup for Landry. It'd be nice to see Parnell hold his own because he needs to if he's auditioning for his job next year or if he's a surefire cut. But Eric Flowers, nonetheless, he'll likely be double-teaming Jarrell Casey or helping Omame with Jarrell Casey every once in a while. So that'll be something to see how that left side, really how the entire interior can handle a guy like Jarrell Casey, who is still an elite defensive tackle in the NFL and can devastate you, especially in the run game. So that'll be definitely interesting.
If I stall enough for you, could you look to see how, if this is the case, Omame fared last year against Jarrell Casey when he was the Jaguars starting left guard? Or I'm not, maybe Omame was out at that point. I don't know. But as you see, I'm already trying to stall for you.
Yeah.
Because I feel like Casey had his moments of pressure, but why do I feel like he didn't have like a lights out game either? Everyone was just more focused on him trashing Blake Bortles, which ended up being a pretty decently correct statement from him so far. But you got it yet, or you still need me to keep stalling?
I mean, which week do you want against the Titans? Do you want the most recent, or do you want?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Whatever you can find. I mean, can you find?
Yeah, I can pull that up. It's just a matter of when did we play the Titans last year? Week 2. Okay, so I'll pull up the Week 2 one. Allowed pressure. All right, Patrick Omame last year against the Titans in Week 2 led up 0 pressures. So,
okay.
That was the first one. He actually led the team. He had the highest offensive rating of that game and was an 88.4 pass blocker. So Omame actually had himself a pretty strong game last year against the Tennessee Titans.
And do you happen to have any idea what Casey was at? But I mean, that's obviously an very good like thing to remember. Omame has done well against this Titans team in the past. He is settling in here. He was getting significant playing time this past week.
Jarrell Casey in that same game had 4 total pressures and 3 run stops, and he had he was the Titans' highest graded defensive player that game. So Omame was the Jaguars' best player, and Jarrell Casey was the Titans' best player in their respective units.
It looks like iron is going to be sharpening iron on Thursday night, folks. The Jaguars' third string left guard versus a Pro Bowl defensive tackle. Iron sharpening iron. Chris, do you have any other matchups that you're looking forward to this upcoming week?
I guess to kind of cheat, the Titans run defense against Leonard Fournette. Leonard Fournette was having himself a day against the Bills, who have a decent run defense as well, before obviously going across the entire field to throw some haymakers. But I think that would be one of the biggest things, kind of just looking at it. Obviously, as the week goes on and we have the crossover, I don't want to kind of spoil the episodes going forward, but I was able to stall myself long enough to where I was able to pull up the Jaguars' final game against the Titans, which I forgot was the last week of the season. Jarrell Casey did not have a good game ratings-wise against the Jaguars towards the end of the season. He was the 15th best rated defensive player for the Titans that day.
Jeez.
55.9. He still had 4 pressures. He had 1 sack, 1 hit, 2 pressures, or 2 hurries, but was horrible in run defense, was awful in tackling, and pass rush was meh. And then allowed pressure, Patrick Omame also had a meh day. 2 total pressures on the day, had a 61. So their first game, iron sharpening iron, and then the second one was who could be the least amount of bad. So hopefully we're kind of getting a little more of the first matchup, because I don't want to see bad football by any means.
Right.
So if we're going to average it out, Drell Casey will have two pressures. One of them will be against Patrick Omame.
Our Jaguars. And I think that should just about do it for us here at Locked On Jaguars. So go ahead, make sure you're subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Megaphone, anywhere you can find podcasts. You can find us. Stay tuned for the crossover episode tomorrow night with Jimmy Morris of Locked On Titans. We will catch up with you guys then.